Hey, what's going on? Welcome in to Let Me Put a List Together along with Brian Mitchell. I'm Mark Grody. We are back with another list. We are the premier list-making show. This particular show is a little bit morbid. It is the top 13 most shocking celebrity deaths. Right off the bat, as I bring in my buddy Brian Mitchell, Mitchell came up with a number for this, and you just told me off the air. What was your process?
Well, I mean, top 13. 13 is, in some cultures, unlucky. Popular in our culture is unlucky.
Uh-huh.
But, top 13 most shocking celebrity deaths. We usually go really light on this show. But, you know, some of these people that we're going to be talking about were huge celebrity figures in our lives and probably your lives in your lifetime. Now, so here's the list of the top 13 most shocking celebrity deaths to us, and they would be as followed. Or is it as follows?
I put the S on there.
Okay.
Good job.
Princess Diana, Aaliyah, Biggie, and Tupac. They are together because they're related. Not as family, but their murders are related. John Lennon, Whitney Houston, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jackson, Prince, Robin Williams, Selena, Kurt Cobain, Heath Ledger, and Chris Farley. So, Mark, you know, as we start, every death is sad. Every death is important. So to list death, I think, is not really what we're trying to do. I think what we're trying to do is list maybe the impact that these deaths had on us and maybe our Gen X, friends and family. You know what I'm saying?
This is it's pop culture, for better or for worse. Celebrity deaths are shocking. Celebrities, for better or for worse, they touch people differently. Their deaths mean more. And that's not always a good thing, but it is the flat out truth. So that's what we're doing. And let's get to it, Mr. Mitchell. I think that it is your week to go first, if you'd like to start us on our top 13 most shocking celebrity deaths.
Yes, I would say that number 13 is, properly titled, very shocking. And that would be the death of singer, R&B, pop songstress Aaliyah. Now, Aaliyah was only 22 years old when she passed away. She was at the height of her career making videos for this particular album. And the video that she was making at the time of her death was called Rock the Boat. It takes place in the Bahamas. And what they did is they took a Cessna 402 light aircraft and landed in the Bahamas. They shot the video. And then after they shot the video, they were headed back about a day early. But they could not get the same exact Cessna that they took. They had to get another plane. What they didn't know is that this particular plane couldn't hold the extra 700 pounds that they carried on the first plane. So it weighed the plane down. They also said that the pilot, Morales, had traces of cocaine and alcohol in his system. So when they took off, they crashed and basically everyone on the plane died. One gentleman survived. I believe it was her bodyguard, but he died in the hospital. And why this is shocking is because this beautiful girl who was so talented, so humble, and just an amazing singer. You might know Aaliyah from the whole R. Kelly situation where supposedly they got married when she was 15. That might ring a bell for you if you're not really into the R&B of the early 2000s. So Aaliyah's shocking death at 22, I think it's a place to start at number 13.
Uh-huh. And if you need further example of who she is, here we go. 3, 2, 1. If at first you don't succeed, dust yourself off and try again. Try again. Is that pretty good?
I guess that's yeah.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't quit the sports gig anytime soon.
If at first you don't succeed.
Or I probably wouldn't take that to any sort of karaoke.
Wow. It's not even karaoke level. God. Wow. This has been a humbling experience so far today. No, I agree with you, man. Hyper talented. And she's one of the people on this list that I think I'm more intrigued than just about anybody, and maybe because she was just 22, as to what she would have turned out to be, assuming that she did keep away from R. Kelly, that the sky was a limit for her.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She's obviously a singer, dancer. She could have been a movie star.
Yeah, she was in she was just starting her movie career with Romeo Must Die, and then she was going to be in Queen of the Damned, which was released after her death. So, just really just a sad, tragic event.
Amen, man. Amen. So all right.
Aaliyah's at 13 and
12. I'm going to go with Princess Diana. Diana, who died in a car crash at the age of 36 while the driver was trying to get away from the paparazzi. It was in 1997. And I think that the coverage of this death might have been bigger than any on this particular list. The funeral was watched by 32 million people. Part of it, ironically, I think, is because we were not quite into the era of social media as of yet. So this was one of those times where, and I think that TV still dominates in any kind of breaking news or celebrity deaths, but people were absolutely glued to their televisions for all of this coverage that went on with Diana and all the different parts that are involved in, because I think because the whole concept of the monarchy, it was always kind of like a soap opera to begin with. You know what I mean? Like just dancing with the power that doesn't really exist, and that a lot of it's just playing dress up in London and all that kind of stuff. It was like, to me, it was like the greatest reality TV star of all time dying in a obviously a very, you know, action packed way.
Yeah.
So it was bizarre, man.
There were so many pieces of this. I mean, it started with her life was just so on camera, starting with, you know, when her and she got married, the big, what's his name?
Charles?
Yes. Prince Charles. Okay.
Prince Charles. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Her life has been in front of the camera since she married Prince Charles. They had that huge wedding. And then, of course, they had their troubles and they had their two beautiful children. And then she kind of stepped away. They got divorced because he was really in love with another woman. And then she went on to live her life and she did it her way. And it was very brave. And she was also huge in, you know, giving herself to different charities and, you know, bringing attention to different charities that needed help. And she was very important in her two sons' lives, bringing them up not only as royalty, but how they making them feel like normal children. And she had a big part in that. And then just to all of a sudden have her life just taken away as sudden and unexpected in a horrible car crash. I mean, that hit the public hard. So I would definitely say that Princess Diana deserves to be on this list. Her impact was huge on the world and her death was even bigger, as you said, especially in the world pre-social media. One little tidbit that I'd like to add, and I find this kind of interesting as I was doing my research, is that Mother Teresa died on the same day as Princess Diana. And I found this interesting is that rosary beads that were given to Princess Diana from Mother Teresa were in her hands in her coffin.
What?
She was buried with Mother Teresa's rosary beads because that was a gift. So I thought, isn't that kind of interesting? That little, you know, that entanglement, right? Not, that's not the right word, but this, that little coincidence, really interesting.
Yeah, I knew neither. I did not know that Mother Teresa had died and that the rosary was buried with her. So yeah, no, yeah. Interesting. So, all right. So we are Princess Diana at number 12. You get number 11.
All right. Number 11 is going to be Biggie and Tupac. You're a huge fan of that, of Biggie, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. But honestly, I am a big fan, but I've been looking forward to hearing your acumen because you might know a little bit more about the hip hop game than I do. So I've actually been looking forward to hearing, and I'm actually surprised you have it where you do. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm talking as, I guess, impact maybe on as me and also the entire world. I'm probably
trying to tie
two of those things together.
That's fair. I got
But here's what happened, basically, is that Tupac was in a studio and he was recording music, and there was Biggie and the Junior Mafia were in the same building. And what happened was when Tupac came out, he was basically gunned down, and Biggie and all of them were up in the upper studio, and they found out that, oh my gosh, your man Tupac was shot. So they all ran down. Tupac was actually taken to the hospital, and they were left kind of like, what's up? Well, word got back to Tupac, and there was all this gossip that it was Biggie that was behind the shooting of Tupac Shakur. That's not true, but that was just the rumor, because it was just how convenient it was that they were both in the same studio. You know, basically, Tupac got shot. He survived. And then that's when that whole East West Coast thing started, because you had Tupac Shakur. He signed with Death Row. And where this all kind of started getting really crazy was at the Source Awards. And I believe it was the 1995 Source Awards. It was in New York. So Death Row, that whole crew comes out to New York to the Source Awards, which is a large hip hop magazine at the time. And so they're there, and Sean Puffy Combs is there with Biggie, of course. And then you got Suge Knight is there with, you know, Snoop Doggy Dogg and all those guys. And basically on stage, they're kind of calling each other out. In fact, Suge Knight goes, you know, hey, if you want to be with a record company where the producer isn't all in the videos, all isn't dancing around, come to Death Row. So that was a shot right at Puffy. I think Puffy played it cool. He kind of stepped back and thought that this stuff was getting a little out of hand. So the bad blood is going back and forth. And on September 7th, 1996, Shakur was in Las Vegas, and he was at a Mike Tyson fight with Suge Knight at the MGM Grand. They were in the lobby, and I guess somebody in their group was spotting some gangsters from California that were there, some of the Southside Compton Crips, and they had some bad blood between them. There was a fight that ensued, and then everybody took off, and Suge Knight and Tupac jumped into a BMW and took off as part of a large convoy. About 11:15, they were at a stoplight, and four white late model Cadillac sedans pull up, and they start firing in the car. And Shakur was struck four times. And, you know, as tough as he is, I mean, this guy survived for several days until he died of internal bleeding on September 13th, 1996. Flip that. There's an opportunity right after Biggie goes and records his Life After Death album, and he's going out to L.A. to the Soul Train Awards, and he goes to an after party. And they're at the after party. And I think that they did have a little bit of hesitation about going out to L.A. But in his last interview on L.A. radio, he was all about peace. And he was all about, you know, Pac's my man. These guys are my man. They go to the Soul Train Awards. They go to the after party. And Biggie leaves and gets shot up in the car. And he passes away. So the thing about this is none of this needed to happen. All this East West Coast stuff was really just drummed up by the media and probably by the record companies themselves. I mean, you know, there's nothing like, you know, two groups going to war. But normally in hip hop, it's just done on wax, or it's just done on recordings. You know, you had great, you know, MC battles, you know, all through hip hop. But this one just got a lot more scarier, because you started bringing in all these different outside sources from, you know, gangs and criminals, and it just got out of hand. So we lost two great hip hop artists. Now they're, you know, living legends. In fact, Biggie is now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm sure Tupac is close behind him. But what an impact, and what a major loss over something so incredibly stupid.
I think what you were trying to say when Biggie went to California was he was going back to Cali.
You know, when I rely on you just to provide the songs that these people sing.
I know. going back to Cali.
Okay. And then the great part is that every time you sing the songs, there's always like something just a bit off. And which is the best part.
What did I mess up?
Because it's I'm going back to Cali.
Oh,
Cali.
Yeah. Not back to.
which I enjoy listening to you murder the song, no pun intended, and then going right for it. But I love it, though, because you just throw it out there, and it's beautiful.
I'm going. All right, I'll stop it with the singing. But, and the shame of it, too, was that these two guys were, like, besties for a while. Like, Biggie looked up Tupac, like, at first, because Tupac was a celebrity before Biggie had really hit the big time. So these guys were – but and the whole – I got to say, like, you're right. Like, at the end of the day, the East Coast, West Coast thing was stupid, but it was also kind of cool at first. And I could see like why the record companies were into it, because it was like a gimmick that everybody can get on board with. It was like sport. You know what I mean? Oh, man, I'm West Coast. Oh, man, I'm East Coast. I'm Cubs. I'm Sox. You know, I'm Bears. I'm Packers. It was like everybody get on their team. But there was no. The idea with this was not to be killing each other.
Guys,
to take it down a notch. That was not, and so then it all had to go. But it was a huge part of 90s hip hop, and there were two bigger names. And you said it all well, man. I mean, it was God, 24. Biggie was 24. Tupac was 25.
I know.
I mean, these guys had so much life left in them. I mean, we're looking at it from a celebrity artist standpoint. So from a selfish standpoint, it's like, I would have loved to have seen what was next for these guys artistically.
Absolutely. You know? They were huge. And not only that, but I mean, Biggie was a giver and Tupac was a giver. I'm sure they would have started their own labels and tried to help younger artists coming up and avoid the pitfalls of the business. And
I'm sure you've seen the documentary where at the end they go to a live shot of the funeral of the hearse going down the street in Brooklyn and blasting the song Hypnotize out of their windows. And like everybody, it was like, it's a funeral, but it was like a celebration in Brooklyn. So they all loved him. All right, we should move on before I start singing again, because I'm very tempted to start rapping again. And you don't want that. Nobody needs that. But we could circle back to it. All right, so I guess I am number 10 on our top 13 most shocking celebrity deaths. I'm going to go with Heath Ledger. Died of a drug overdose at the age of 28. Apparently, he was never really healthy when he was working on roles. Mm-hmm. Like, he popped a lot of Ambien and couldn't sleep and kind of was like the tortured artist syndrome. I think one of the most surprising things, coming at it from a fan and a celebrity standpoint, when he died, we found out that, you know, one of his calls was, or last calls was to one Mary Kate Olsen. I didn't realize he had hung out with the Olsen twins. I was always entertained by that. I was like, oh my God. Because I was like, they're like real people. Like Mary Kate Olsen, they're real people. And these are people in their 20s and they hang out with Heath Ledger. And I just really never thought of them as actual real people.
You know who I always think of them? Whenever I think of Mary Kate Ashley Olsen, I always think of, like, you know, those haunted dolls in movies where they just kind of put up the haunted dolls. They always look like two like haunted dolls, or the two twins from The Shining.
It's just
creepy. Like, they got those stares, like their eyes are like real big and wide, and they're like just staring at you like death.
They creep me out. They had doll eyes. You're right. I mean, they
creep
bulky
me out.
Yeah. But yeah, that, for some reason, like when I do these lists, I always think, okay, well, what comes to your brain? And Mary Kate Olsen always pops up. And then, of course, you know, The Dark Knight was in post-production at the time of his death. So he never even was around when that movie premiered, nor was he around when he posthumously received the Best Supporting Actor Award. It was just bizarre and shocking, the whole thing. And again, just another waste of talent. And similar to a couple of the people on this list already, like, I would have loved to have seen where Heath Ledger would have maxed out, because he was on the verge of being the guy that got whatever role he wanted to. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know what? You could just look at his whole list of movies. Everything. I mean, I enjoyed all of these movies. The Patriot, A Knight's Tale, Monster's Ball, Lords of Dogtown, Brokeback Mountain, Candy, and of course, The Dark Knight. When Heath Ledger was first announced that he was going to be the Joker, people were like, what are you talking about? True Batman fans were like, this is absolutely nuts. This is not going to work. And let me tell you, Heath Ledger blew my mind. I mean, there's stories of him where he didn't even use like the movie makeup. He went to like dollar stores and got like cheap clown paint and put it on his face. He also, I heard that when researching the role, Tom Waits, who is a really weird sounding guy like this, you know, he's a famous singer, and it's understood that Heath Ledger actually kind of took Tom Waits and did some, you know, some fluctuations with his voice, utilized Tom as the bass, and that was the voice for the Joker. If you listen to the Joker voice and you listen to the Tom Waits interview, it's exactly what he sounds like. It's mind-bending how cool that is. Heath's Joker is always going to be the best, in my opinion.
I think so, too, and they were all great. Like, Jack Nicholson was awesome, too. Like, they were all superb performances, but still, amongst greatness, Heath Ledger stands out for sure.
I mean, and 28 years old, again, another, you know, 28, so much more to give. Be careful with mixing drugs. Do not mix drugs.
No, no, don't do drugs, kids. All right, number nine.
So number nine is going to be Selena, the Tejano singer who passed away at the age of, again, 23, March 31st of 1995. Her story really worked hard and got to where she was just at the point of where she was going to cross over into mainstream music with her first English album. And then she's cut down by somebody, and actually somebody very close to her, Yolanda Saldivar. Yolanda Saldivar was actually stealing from Selena's fan club, because people would send money for the fan club stuff and they would not receive anything. And they started to get complaints, and Yolanda was the one that was taking the money. So when they confronted her, at a hotel, and Yolanda actually had a gun and took out Selena in the hotel. And what's sad is that her shot just hit a main artery. You know, probably normally one shot might not have taken out, you know, a person, but where the artery of where she was hit, it she basically bled out. Again, no reason for that. A loss of a beautiful talent, a beautiful girl who was sweet and kind to everybody, was great to her fans. They worshipped her, especially in the Texas and surrounding areas of Mexico. You know, she was the queen. I mean, she was a star. She was everything to those people. A person that, you know, made good and was good doing it, and was tragically killed for something as stupid as that. So now that lady's in prison for the rest of her life, and we don't have Selena.
Yeah, and she was, yeah, she was the top-selling Latin artist in the 1990s. The breadth of her reach, I don't think she had splashed hugely in the USA, but she was definitely worldwide. And I remember seeing, and not knowing much about her, quite frankly, when she died, probably having heard of her, but then learning about her and, like, literally seeing kids, like young kids who are into pop music, like bawling over her death, you know, just because of the breadth of her reach and the age group that she had sung to, and, you know, just reached a lot of people. And I guess so far on this list, at the age of 23, she might actually end up being the youngest.
No, actually, Aaliyah was 22.
Oh, Aaliyah was 22. Okay. Yes. Okay. But yeah, Selena, you know, 23 years old, shocking as it gets. And that's another one too, that to this day, there are still memorials and still remembrances for. And as with all celebrity deaths, sometimes the mystery around them, or the size of their reach, gets bigger and bigger because people want to learn and they want to know and they want to think about what the potential could have been. Yeah. So,
okay, let's do a recap real quick. Number 13, Aaliyah. Number 12, Princess Diana. Number 11, Biggie and Tupac. Number 10, Heath Ledger. And number 9, Selena. And Mark, you are next.
Right, and that would make number 8 on the list, John Lennon. Of course, one of the lead singers of the Beatles. I'm not going to give a biography on John Lennon. Everybody knows who Lennon is. Right, what am I doing? Born in Liverpool. all right, that was stupid. John Lennon shot and killed in 1980. Now, I was 8 years old when that happened. So that means that when it happened, I was young. And now you can do the math and know that I'm old now. Mm-hmm. But so when he was shot, I don't remember it. I didn't quote unquote feel it in that figurative sense. Mm-hmm. But the magnitude of it is, again, one of those things that is discussed to this day. The person who shot him is a celebrity name, for worse. Mm-hmm. Mark David Chapman, similar to the Selena situation, was actually supposedly a fan of John Lennon. But this was, I mean, as far as like magnitude, and like this felt like an assassination more than anything. Just because John Lennon was like, he was this peace loving dude. So there's irony attached to it. He was a political figure in some ways. He was about peace in a lot of ways. And obviously his songwriting skills are, you know, some would say second to none. So the magnitude of this was just massive and perhaps just as big as anybody on this list.
I mean, I would have to say that so many bands and so many musical artists were inspired by the Beatles. So they were like the Holy Grail. He was the first one out of the Beatles to die. So that's your first impact, basically the death of your childhood, one of your heroes dying. A lot of people looked at it that way. And I think it's just bizarre, as you said, Mark David Chapman, you know, John was leaving the Dakota to go to the studio and record and was kind enough to sign his album. And there's a picture of that, of John Lennon signing Mark David Chapman's album. And then, of course, you know, they're headed back, returning to their apartment around 11 o'clock on December 8th, 1980. And he's shot twice in the back. Actually, he's rushed in a police cruiser to Roosevelt Hospital, and they pronounced him DOA at around 11:15. Now, another strange twist to this is Howard Cosell actually had John Lennon on Monday Night Football one time. He was there in the booth and they were talking, and there was a game going on that Monday night, and they're in the game, and behind the scenes, there's all this, John Lennon was shot dead. We have to report on this. We're not going to break away, but you know, you need to say something, you know, more after the game or whatever. And Howard Cosell didn't really want to do it, but as a journalist and as a, you know, a reporter, regardless of it's sports, news, whatever, that is a huge announcement that needs to be made. And there, if you go on YouTube, you will see the Howard Cosell announcement that John Lennon passed away.
So, right. And again, it's 1980. People aren't getting their alerts on their phone.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Or, you know, TMZ is not reporting it, and then everybody seeing it
right
away. So that was a pretty heavy death in 1980, and they're still going back, and you know, the 40th anniversary, they always talk about this was the day, and sometimes they do, you know, different documentaries and look at it from different aspects and things. But yeah, that was a huge death. And yeah, as you said, the impact probably not felt so much in our Gen X generation, but definitely the one before us definitely took that one hard.
Oh yeah, the boomers, and they, like you said, there's so many of them, obviously, by definition, that's why you still hear it, and there are documentaries and movies and writings, you know, probably more, it's probably written about more than anybody on this list.
Yeah.
So that's Lennon at 8. You are 7, sir.
And I'm going to say number 7 is Whitney Houston. So do you remember when Whitney Houston died? Do you remember that whole announcement?
I can't actually place myself. I don't remember the moment or where I was when Whitney Houston died. No.
I was at a business convention, and I was in Arizona, and it was like in February, of course, February 9th, 2012. And I remember I was at, like, you know, an outdoor reception, and I looked at my phone, of course, because at this time, unlike Lennon, you could just see news that was going on. And they said that Whitney Houston died. And it was like, Whitney Houston died? How the hell is Whitney? Whitney's like, you know, bigger than big. I mean, she's the queen of pop, R&B. Reportedly, she was looking a lot skinnier, and she must have had some form of drug problem, because there were all these stories going around, and they were showing pictures of how she was looking so bony and so skinny and wasn't looking good. And I guess before her death, she was acting really crazy and erratic. And they had that huge party right before the Grammy Awards that Clive Davis throws every year. And Clive Davis, of course, is her mentor. The day of, she was found unconscious in her Beverly Hilton hotel, submerged in a bathtub, and they tried to bring her to life, but she was found unresponsive. So there was no criminal intent, they said, but she definitely did have drugs in her system. So she had cannabis. She had, well, I'm not going to go into all that. She had toxicology reports that she had like a lot of different drugs in her system. So it's listed as an accident. Did she just fall asleep, you know, and then go under the water and pass out? So who knows? But just a tragic death. I mean, Whitney Houston, you don't need a bio for Whitney Houston. Nope. You know her impact. You know who she was. I mean, she was the queen of MTV. She was the queen of, you know, African-American black artists, a hell of a singer. She could do anything. She could do pop. She could do gospel. She could do R&B. She was just amazing. She was a movie star with The Bodyguard. I Will Always Love You, the remake of Dolly Parton's song, is probably one of the, was on like number one for like the longest time. I don't have an exact length of how long that was number one, but she died at age 48. And again, she's another one that needed to stay around, because she had so much more. She probably would have went into either a gospel type career, you know, moving away from pop and doing something different. But of course, drugs got involved and here we are.
Yeah. And think about it, this one blew me away when it did happen, because she was portrayed through media and MTV and just the way she carried herself as this pristine princess. You know, you call it, she was the queen of pop, like mm-hmm. you said. And everything about her was, you know, she's a beautiful woman whose talents were, quite frankly, her talents were probably wasted doing a lot of the pop stuff she did. Mm-hmm. I mean, her voice was great, and she probably, you know, I understand why she did what she did. She made a boatload of dough, and I would have done the same thing. But she probably, you know, could have done more credible things with her mm-hmm. career, but whatever. But it just blew me away that she was, you know, she obviously had a cocaine problem. She was with Bobby Brown, who is known as one of the great bad boys of music, which I always found ironic. Like, I was like, huh, that's weird. Like, this super innocent Whitney Houston. Yeah. You know, it is symbolic of how, I guess, good producers and, you know, these PR people are at their jobs and creating pop stars. Mm-hmm. And she was just a creation of pop stars, just happened to have a ton more talent than most of them. But the way she died and the people she hung out with towards the end, like, that's not what they were putting out there in any way, shape, or form. And I actually, it's funny, like a few weeks ago, I would recommend this to anybody. There is I can't remember if it was on Netflix, probably, but there's a great Whitney Houston documentary out there that mm-hmm. kind of shows all this. It shows her where her talent started and gospel and all of that, and just the pure talent, and then who she hung out with and where she kind of went wrong. Yeah. So there was kind of, and then not to mention she's a black woman. I mean, that's a big part of this, of her story as well. But she was put up there, you know, and portrayed like any other pop star with the PR machine behind her. And then all of a sudden we've lost her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, she did come from, you know, humble beginnings. She got the attention of Clive Davis, and Clive Davis was all about making a hit machine. That's what he wanted. And he was all about good songs. And it didn't have to be R&B songs. He wanted good pop songs. And he put Whitney's talent with the good pop songs, her ability. And that is what you get. You get a superstar smash, kind of like what happened with Mariah Carey and how she started out. She started out very vanilla, and then she left that and became a little bit more of a bad girl R&B and more of herself. Now, the thing about Whitney Houston is, and I think that there is one particular moment in her life that I think really affected her and put her on this different path. And that was at the Soul Train Awards. She was up for a nomination. I can't remember what the nomination was, but she was up for a nomination. And when they said her name, the crowd booed her.
Oh, because she had sold out?
Yes.
Or at least that's the way
That hit her very hard.
Yeah.
She was from humble beginnings. Her family was in gospel. Her mother was a gospel singer. She was part of the black church. And so, you know, she did what she thought was best. And of course, you know, it takes you on a certain path. And then sometimes they feel that you don't belong there anymore. So maybe that's what made her reach out to a guy like Bobby Brown, who was a little bit more, you know, steeped in the hood and maybe gave her some credibility back, which also ended up with a whole bunch of other things.
Yep. No doubt, man. All right. That was number 7. That was your choice, I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I am into number 6. For number 6, I'm going to go with Robin Williams. Great Robin Williams committed suicide at the age of 63. So he lived a little bit more life than some of the people on our list so far. But this, to me, Brian, was a classic case of you never really know what's going on with a person.
Absolutely.
Because this was a guy, like, again, irony, a guy who was filled with so much life, or appeared to be. And obviously there was something terribly wrong, a tortured soul, a guy who lived with some depression. I think he was a guy who was also no longer the cream of the crop in terms of getting the roles that he had wanted in movies. I think he was still getting roles, but I don't think his movies weren't nearly as successful anymore. And it's a case of, like, when the music started to stop, Robin Williams, I think, more so than any other performer that I've seen in my lifetime anyway, I'm sure that there are people as much, like, he got off on that thrill of performing live and improvising and the heat of the moment. And nobody ever really knew who he was because he was just such a whack job. Like, we'd go on, and I mean that in the best possible way. Like, when Robin Williams would go on a talk show, the talk show host, like on Letterman or whatever, the talk show host would get like two questions, and then it would be like, this, the Robin Williams just doing his stand-up act, improvising, and just you know, just crazy. So you never knew who this guy was. And obviously deep down inside, there was this huge hole in his soul that was never satiated. And he was, you know, again, didn't really know what this guy was all about, but then we learned what he was all about, and a sad case and a genius of a performer.
Yeah, I mean, what they said is after his passing, come to find out that he had Lewy body dementia, which is a kind of dementia that comes out. It encompasses both like Parkinson's disease and dementia. It causes a lot of issues with anxiety and depression, and it messes with your whole, you know. In fact, his wife was saying that, you know, he was having spikes of fear and anxiety, depression, insomnia. He was getting a little bit of memory loss, paranoia, delusions, and they were struggling to find his diagnosis. And I just think that he knew that the rest of his life was not going to be like it had been.
Uh-huh.
And it was going on a downward spiral. Not saying that this is what you should do when something starts to go, you know, you kind of, normally we ride it out. But if you're in depression and dealing with different things, you don't think straight and you don't make the right decisions. And I believe that suicide is something that someone in their right mind would not do. So clearly someone committing suicide has to be in their wrong mind. They're not in their right mind, and I don't think they should be held responsible for that. So it's just a tragic loss, because Robin Williams, not only with the comedy, but gave us so many great movie roles. And I mean, you could sit there and name how many films, like, did you just love because Robin Williams was in them? I mean, Good Will Hunting, which he won an Academy Award for. You have Good Morning Vietnam, Awakenings, Fisher King, your favorite movie, Mrs. Doubtfire.
The Silly Nanny. Yeah.
He did Popeye, for God's sake.
He was Popeye. That's right.
So.
Oh, and then Comic Relief. Remember that whole thing?
Yeah. The reason why this hit everybody so hard is because it came out of nowhere.
Yep.
As you said, you know, you didn't really know what he was dealing with ever because he put on that face. So he died August 11th, 2014, at the age of 63. Something bittersweet with me in that was I was in California, I think about 5 days after that happened. And there was I was in Hollywood at the Walk of Fame, and there was a huge memorial of, you know, all different kinds of things, flowers and stuffed animals and things at his star. So he was truly loved.
When are you planning to go in back to Cali?
Not if you're singing it that way, incorrect.
All right, dude. We're getting into our top five now. This is big time. Top five celebrity deaths. Shocking celebrity deaths. Yeah. And you, my friend, I just did Robin, so you have number five.
I'm going to say Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
He starts out our number five. And first of all, I just really want to thank Kurt Cobain for one huge thing, and that's knocking Hairband off of the charts and starting to bring back just intense rock and roll.
Yeah.
Alternative, just great songs, real heartfelt, none of this Hairband crap. That's why I loved it. I mean, even though I was a hip hop head back there in, you know, 89, 90, 91, when that whole alternative thing started coming in, I mean, I bought this album, and I wasn't even really into rock, but this song was so, Smells Like Teen Spirit was so powerful and such an anthem for Gen X. It just changed the world, where everybody was, you know, looking for the next big rock and roll act. They were just creative songwriters and just creative music, and it wasn't poppy. It was just real and good. It had balls to it, I can say.
Well, it's funny because, you know, everybody labels it as grunge or alternative, as you were saying, but it was just the return of rock. That's what it was. I mean, it was like, you know, back in the, you know, what's considered classic rock, like the Led Zeppelins of the world and the Rolling Stones to a different extent, that, as you said, that went away when the Motley Crues and the Poisons and the Rats and all these bands came along. And then you just got back to good old fashioned fucking kick your ass rock music. And that's what Nirvana Nirvana was. And he was like, you know, I love Pearl Jam and Eddie Vedder, but Kurt Cobain was the single biggest rock star of the 90s. And yeah. He is considered justifiably one of the greatest lead singers of all time, like top 10. I don't know that he's number one,
yeah.
But he's, you know, top 10. He, you know, this is a game changing musician right here. Mm. And I remember I was, as you probably were too, I know you're a little younger, but I was in college at the time that he died, and I was actually working at a rock station, like where we played that music. Like grunge was the shit, period. So it hit that one, unlike John Lennon, because I was too young. Kurt Cobain one hit me in all sorts of different ways, and it kinda ended something, or it was the beginning of the end of something, because all those bands eventually started to fade out, and grunge music, as it were, or rock music, like that, it faded away again.
Well, I think it just turned into another version of itself, because rock is always pretty much steady, but it just goes into all these like different versions. And
yeah, I mean, there was really nothing like that.
But it was just so refreshing to go from like Cherry Pie to like In Bloom or Come As You Are. You know what I'm saying?
My God.
It was like, right. I mean, I was just like, God, this Cherry Pie shit just. This just sucks. Like, God, go away. You know, and I know we have fans that are really into that stuff, part of their whole high school experience. And I totally respect that. But just calling it for what it is, I mean, I just thought that music was crap. And I got, you know, you got to remove Motley Crue out of there. I can't put Motley Crue with that group. You know, Motley Crue, I mean, I can't put that with that group. There
well,
are
they kind of like, they kind of started it all. So you give them, like, everybody kind of copied. So yeah. I guess so,
like,
I can.
Yeah.
I can
it's like, I can't
that.
Put, like, Guns N' Roses in that. In
oh
that
no!
Thing.
Guns N' Roses.
I can't put
rock,
any
man.
Of the. Yeah, exactly. No, there's just don't. Certain groups, like you said, the Poisons, the Warrant, Hair Bands, Winger. Can't do it.
Yeah, we could actually do a bad music list at some point.
I'm sure.
Like bad
hair metal bands.
Actually, we should. Yeah. We should sidebar.
Sidebar.
Let's do top 10 hair bands. At
crappy
some point
hair
now.
Bands. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
But we all know what was up with Kirk. I mean, he was, as you said, he was a great artist, but a tortured artist. He was dealing with chronic health problems. He was dealing with depression. He was addicted to heroin. All of that. He had stomach issues. So all of that rolled into one. And then, of course, the pressures of being famous and not wanting to be. I don't think they had any intention to be as big as they were. I think they were just going to be in this nice little compartment of Seattle rock. You know what I mean? And just
they wanted to be big, but they didn't know they were going to be like the premier band
exactly.
of the decade.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's and I think when that came around, it was just too much for him to handle. And he was found dead in his home in Seattle at the age of 27. It was a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head.
All right. So that was five. This one would be me at number four. I'm going to go Prince. Died back in 2016, the age of 57, apparent overdose for Prince. It's weird, man, because I was definitely a fan of Prince because Prince was great. Prince was a super talented artist who put out great pop rock songs. Mm-hmm. But there was always something about Prince that was always so hidden and so mysterious that I think that was part of his act. Like you never really got an idea of who in the hell Prince was. So at the threat of sounding a little bit insensitive, I don't know how surprised I was about Prince overdosing, just because I was like, what's with this guy? Like, what does he do? I mean, whenever I hear him talking, it's, you know, this like deep mumbly voice, and he's this little guy, this compact fella who comes out with his guitar and just rocks, but then you just don't know who he is. And I guess you could probably say that about a lot of rock stars and a lot of celebrities, but something about Prince, man, was just like different. So I while I was sad and I was somewhat surprised, I was like, all right, what was going on with this guy? So yeah, that's what I think about Prince.
Well, this one, it hits a little closer to home just because I am
literally.
Yeah, I'm 5 minutes away from Paisley Park. So this one, but at the time I wasn't living here. I was still in Chicago.
That's Minnesota, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. Chanhassen. I live like, I live in Eden Prairie. Chanhassen is like 5 minutes away. Let's just put it this way, is that my Starbucks is in Chanhassen, and that's how close it is.
Okay. You're so relatable.
So we were actually, me and the family were out on we were in Puerto Rico doing some spring break things when this all started to break.
Oh.
And I remember I was totally crushed because I'm a huge, huge Prince fan. Have been since I was yay big. I have older brothers and sisters. They used to have all the albums from 1999 to Purple Rain to you couldn't get away from Prince, especially when you were in grade school listening to the radio. That's all that was on was Prince's music.
Right.
So
let me know if you need me to sing, but go ahead.
No, please don't.
Okay.
So, but Prince, I mean, he did have a lot of tragedy in his life. I mean, he lost his son. I mean, he did have a child and the child died a couple weeks after birth. So he did have some tragedy in there. I mean, he's been married and divorced, but I don't know if that, I think music probably always helped him through that, but I think he also was dealing with a lot of physical pain. And I think that is where the opioids started to become involved, because I think he hurt himself a lot with his performing. I mean, he used to do like the splits and dancing and, you know, he's dancing in those high shoes. I mean, you know, you do that over and over again for that long of time, and he was in great shape. But I mean, still, if you're moving around like that at that age, you do start to get some pain going. So I'm sure opioids were brought in there as just, you know, at first relief. And then, of course, once you start taking those, doesn't matter who you are, Prince or the guy down the street, if you start taking those and you're a nice addiction to those going, I mean, you can't stop. And I think that's what happened, that he just got addicted. He couldn't stop. From what I understand is that he had some off the street kind of drugs and it mixed with fentanyl. So he had a little bit. So, I mean, just a minute amount fentanyl mixed with anything is going to put you to sleep and you're going to die. So he was found actually in his elevator at Paisley Park. They said he was passed away for at least 6 hours before somebody found him. And what is also interesting is that he was going to go and start going into a rehab the next day. They were setting it up because he knew he had a problem. When they looked at Paisley Park and investigated everything, he had tons of opioid bottles and prescribed medication, off-the-street medication. So he had just a plethora of stuff going on there. So just a little too late, man. Just a little too late. But
he was revered, man. He was an artist. Like all other artists loved him. Like celebrities loved him. Like Jimmy Fallon talked about hanging out with him at the Saturday Night Live. Like everybody always wanted more Prince. And that just goes to what I was saying. Like people just didn't know. And like I said, that was part of his aura. Like he just didn't know what was going on there because he was a machine. He'd just get up there in his pumps and do his thing and he'd rock too. He was a good guitar player too, man. So
I really, you know, with the situation, I really don't think he knew exactly what he was taking, because the fentanyl that led to his overdose was contained in, as I said, those counterfeit pills, and it made it look like a generic version of Vicodin. So, you know, he might not even known exactly what was in the pills that killed him. So just a horrible situation and under medical care, but then also, you know, was doing stuff on the outside. So couldn't handle it.
Prince is number four. That was mine. So we're into the top three, sir.
All right. Number three for me is going to be Kobe Bryant. This is probably the closest death that we have that's on this list. That's probably the most impactful, I would say, as of right now.
Still feels fresh.
Yeah, it does. January 26, 2020. In fact, when the year anniversary came up of Kobe's death, it was like, you know, I posted something and said something to the effect of, this is when the year of 2020, once this happened, this was like what made 2020 start to go down in a tailspin. Once this happened, it was like everything just started to go nuts. I mean, you know, after this and the whole investigation, and then you had all of the, we don't like to talk about it on here, but the whole COVID thing or whatever.
Well, yeah, no, it was just pre-pandemic.
Yeah, yeah, it was pre-pandemic, and it just kind of started that tailspin. Again, I am a basketball fan, but, you know, ever since, you know, Michael Jordan kind of faded out into Hall of Fame land, I didn't really pay attention too much to basketball. But, I mean, I know there were a lot of huge Kobe Bryant fans, and I think the thing that tied me into this a lot is because, number one, he was retired. Number two, he was with his daughter and helping her become a phenomenal basketball player and was coaching her team. It was just something that, you know, they got on their helicopter to go to practice and the helicopter crashed and that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Done. It's like, this is one of the greatest basketball players of all time.
Uh-huh.
And he's gone. Young guy, handsome. Family man, got everything that he could ever want and just poof, gone. And I feel for his family. I mean, his wife not only lost her husband, but her daughter. I mean, it's sick. I mean, I think of that as a father and yeah. How I could pick up the pieces. I don't know if I could. I just don't know if I could. So this one, as I said, it's higher on the list. I wasn't a huge Kobe Bryant fan in that, you know, I watched basketball and was always wondering what he was doing and him and Shaq and, you know, the championships and all that. I wasn't really into that. Afterwards, you know, just kind of following the story of what he was doing post-basketball is what really drew me into the story and what really broke my heart. So,
yeah. Yep. No, and I actually, you know, considering what I do for a living, I covered, you know, many Bulls-Lakers games at the United Center and had a chance to, on a few occasions, interview Kobe Bryant. You know, not one-on-one necessarily, but usually in a group setting with players. So I got to know him professionally to some degree, and he was always good to the media in that regard. And you know what it is? It's like superstar athletes have an immortal feel to them. So when one of them dies at the age of, what was he, 42, it feels inconceivable that somebody like that had that kind of power, a super, like, it's not a great thing that we put athletes on this pedestal where they're superheroes mm-hmm. and they're, again, immortals, because many of them are very flawed, as Kobe Bryant was very flawed
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about it, considering some of the allegations that he went through in his life. Mm-hmm. But it fits in on this list because of, like you said, the shock value. He died very publicly and very dramatically, and, you know, as one of the greats of all time. And, you know, you talk about Jordan. He was the close in terms of style of play. Like, I think why it hits home with a lot of people in Chicago, where I live and where you grew up and still have a lot of ties, is that he was the closest thing to having stylistically mm-hmm. close to Jordan. Not as good as Jordan, and not, I wouldn't even call him second best or anything mm-hmm. like that, but he carried himself similarly to Jordan mm-hmm. in terms of the way he spoke, in terms of the way he carried himself, the way he dressed, and even his style of play was the closest, because everybody's always looking for the next dude.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. So when he dies, and, you know, January 26th, 2020, it's all so fresh. It's so fresh. I mean, he mm-hmm. just retired a few years ago, and he's got this great new life of retirement, and then, boom, he dies in a helicopter crash, and there's nothing anybody could do about it.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think that's a fair statement that you were saying, is that the reason why, maybe if you didn't follow Kobe Bryant as close, but you understood that what would have happened if Michael Jordan died, and you kind of, you can feel, you know, your Kobe Bryant fans who were outside of the stadium, their T-shirts on, and all of that, once that happened, you know, paying respects. I mean, that's exactly what would have happened at the United Center if that tragedy would have befell on the great Michael Jordan. It would have been the exact same thing.
Yep, no doubt about it, right. And we all are mortal, and we are, I admit it, even as one who is a sports broadcaster, you know, the way we treat sports is ridiculous in terms of the pedestal, but, but, you know, it is what it is. And Kobe was worldwide fame. All right, so we're into the top two, bro.
Yeah.
You did Kobe, so we got two to go. Let me see who is highest left on my list. And it is Michael Jackson.
All right.
Michael Jackson, who, by the medical report, died of a heart attack in 2009. It was like some like benzo thingamajigger that was prescribed.
Propofol. Propofol? Is that how you say it? Propofol?
Provasic? Provasic, was it? Was it Provasic?
I think it was Provasic.
I'm pretty sure it was Provasic. So for our purposes, it was Provasic.
Propofol is now Provasic.
But it's the shit doctors give to patients to like put them to sleep when they're going like
through surgery
under the knife, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, surgery.
Right. So Jackson was like so tortured that this dumb doctor gave it to him, and I'm sure Jackson paid a lot of money, and he was, you know, in some ways they were both culpable, but you know, it was horribly sad. Maybe the most talented guy on this entire list, I would say, about Michael Jackson. And we talk about Game Changer and King of Pop, like all those kinds of things definitely apply to him. But I will say this about Michael Jackson. Everything about his personal life seemed messy. Yes. I don't remember one normal moment about his personal life, to him being beat up and demeaned by his own father, to the child sexual abuse allegations against Michael Jackson himself, to the changing of his skin color, to the holding of the baby out of a high-rise window, to which was right,
yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
He had a chimpanzee, for crying out loud.
Thank you, Lou Piniella, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, just stepped in.
Anorexia. I mean, everything yeah. about like they're like. So
I just heard. I just heard recently something about that he was chemically castrated so his voice could stay higher by Joe Jackson.
I believe it.
I don't know if that's true or not.
His voice, it was very high. Like, there's a lot of singers that have high voices when they sing, but there's like a normalcy to it. But I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. Like, there wasn't one like normal moment with him. So, like it's sad and horrible because, again, the most talented guy, but you talk about a dude who had issues, man. And obviously one of the biggest issues he had was sleep, that he was so desperate. He was so desperate to be asleep or not be conscious that he was giving himself or allowing a doctor to give him the stuff that we take when we have surgery, when people cut us open. So yeah. Sad and shocking, but again, not overly surprised.
He had a lot left to give in the sense that he was going to do one of these comeback tours, the This Is It tour. And it was one of his first major concerts since the History World Tour that ended in 97. And he was saying that he was going to retire after these shows. So people were getting excited that they were going to get to see Michael Jackson one more time at some of these huge shows. So Michael, if you watched the This Is It documentary, you see Michael Jackson, he's out there busting his ass. And I mean, at the time, I can't remember, how old was he when he passed away?
I think it was 42.
No, he was 50. He was 50.
Excuse me, 50, 50. Right.
So he was 50 and he was, you know, busting his butt, working on his dancing, his working with the whole team of dancers, working with the band. So he was working a lot and working a lot of hours on this. And I think that when he went home, he was still probably kind of jazzed and it was hard for him to fall asleep. And so he had Conrad Murray, his doctor, give him the propofol and help him sleep. And I'm sure he's done it as relaxed as it was. I'm sure he's done it numerous times. So this time it just was a little too much. In fact, Michael Jackson, supposedly his last words were "more milk" to Dr. Conrad Murray, who is his
more
doctor.
Yeah.
Because that's what he called propofol.
Okay.
Not joking, dude.
No,
I'm
dead
serious.
Just sounds funny. More milk.
More milk. I know, that's sick. Stop, dude. That's horrible. I'm cutting that out.
Oh, man. More milk.
All right. So all right. That is Michael Jackson in a nutshell, right? There it is.
That's it, dude. All right. Drum roll, please.
There's
one left.
Yeah, there is one left. And of course, I know the reason that this one is number one, and that is the great Christopher Crosby Farley, who passed away December 18th, 1997. Ah, man. Yeah, this was tough, man. I mean, if you love Saturday Night Live and spent your Saturdays in the 90s watching the great Chris Farley, along with everybody else that was on that program, from Dana Carvey to Mike Myers to Adam Sandler to David Spade, Chris Farley was just the rock star that stood out. And he battled demons all of his life, from his weight to drugs to everything he did, was always in excess. And that's how he lived his life. But he was a very sweet soul. He was actually a very devout Catholic as well. I mean, he would go to church, you know, he would party all night or Saturday and then go to church Sunday morning. One of his best friends, Matt Foley, is actually a priest that he named the Matt Foley character after.
Right.
So he was very devout into his Catholicism, but he had a lot of demons, like we all do. His were a little bit more intense, of course. And then, of course, he had all the stardom side of that whole thing. But Chris Farley was actually, he passed away in the John Hancock building in his apartment after a long night of partying with, I believe he had an speedball. And the actual death, he was found by his younger brother, John, in his apartment. He was 33 years old, and he died of an overdose of cocaine and morphine, a combination called a speedball. There you go. 33. That was super young, and he had so much more to give. His movies still make me laugh. I don't know, Mark. I mean,
I would say this, that you're talking about the excess. Farley seemed to live his life like he knew he was not going to live like till he was 40. Like because he always talks about, you know, John Belushi was the guy that he looked up to, and Belushi was the guy who lived his life similarly and died at a similar age, and, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So I think Farley kind of knew, like, he wasn't killing himself or trying to kill himself, but I think he knew what he was doing. I should also point out too, Brian, and you should know this, Catholics love to party. Catholics party more than anybody, because we just go to confession the next day when we party.
And, you know, that's what he, and that's what he would basically do.
Right. This guy, you know, you could just see him in his skits, man. He was all, like, he's always looked bloated. He was obviously overweight, which was part of the comedy that he would give us. One of the great physical comedians of all time, like one of those dudes who, when you saw him, you would just laugh, and he wanted it that way. He wanted to look funny and be funny, and even if it looked sloppy. He had that, like, kind of on-screen naivete about him, like, that just made him I don't know if relatable is the right word.
I would say, and yeah, that's the Chris Farley show would be a perfect example.
Yeah, the Chris Farley show, right. That was symbolic of, like, that seemed like Chris Farley, like this naive kid who was funny and not always trying to be funny, but he just looked at him with his shirt untucked and, you know, with his tight Dockers, and it was just funny. And drugs and alcohol fueled everything about him. You know what I mean? Like, that was his actual fuel to get to where he wanted to be. So he lived his life recklessly in the public. And I think he kind of knew what he was getting himself into. But yeah, I mean, he's very high on my list as well in terms of the effect. And, you know, the 90s, like you were pointing out, I think the 90s was probably the second best decade of SNL ever. And I will acquiesce to the you know, the original cast, for me, the 90s was my favorite. Yeah, but I will allow that the original cast was probably the most famous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But,
all right, dude. Well, that's the list, man. That is it.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and start with your own list, and then and I'll read mine. So go ahead.
Okay. All right. Top 13. And, okay, number 13, I had Princess Diana. At number 12, Aaliyah. At number 11, Heath Ledger. Number 10, Selena. Number 9, I had John Lennon. Number 8 on my list, I had Prince. Number 7, I had Biggie and Tupac. Number 6, I had Whitney Houston. My top 5, Robin Williams was number 5. Number 4, Michael Jackson. 3, Kobe Bryant. Number 2, Chris Farley. And my number 1 was Kurt Cobain.
All right. Okay, my number 13 was Aaliyah. Number 12, Selena. Number 11, John Lennon. Number 10, Princess Diana. Diana, number 9, Whitney Houston, number 8, Biggie and Tupac, number 7, Kobe Bryant, number 6, Kurt Cobain, number 5, Michael Jackson, number 4, Heath Ledger, number 3, Robin Williams, number 2, Chris Farley, and my number 1 is Prince. So we're going to go to Facebook, and there are a lot of people that have been making comments on this. Bob says Farley was his. Elizabeth Lambert, Bowie, and then right afterwards, Alan Rickman, both gutted me. Denise says Prince, Neil Peart, and Eddie Van Halen. I see Eddie Van Halen popping up a lot because that's very, very.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Good one.
Jessica says Prince and Anthony Bourdain. I can listen to Prince, but I can't watch anything with Bourdain in it because it just makes me sad. George Michael, Prince, and Robin Williams from Lisa. Dave says Stevie Ray Vaughan, Kobe Bryant, and John Bonham. Matt says, as a late teen, Chris Farley shocked me and John Candy, since they were only 3 years apart, then Robin Williams, because it was a suicide. And we also have Barb, who says Bowie. So a couple of different versions there. Yeah, you know what? Some of those people definitely needed to be on this list, but of course we can only pick 13. And we tried to pick some of the ones that were kind of impactful in all the different, I guess, generations, right, Mark?
Yeah, but those are all really good additions for sure. And yeah, we talked a lot about this list, Brian and I did, back and forth, and we probably touched on most of those names, probably had about 20, and we kind of paired it down. So it wasn't that easy to get to where we got, but we did, and hopefully we did it some justice, but we definitely appreciate your input on it.
The big phrase in this, or the big adjective, is, you know, shocking, because a lot of these deaths were shocking. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Like, right. They came out of nowhere. I mean, Kobe Bryant, Chris Farley, yeah. Heath Ledger, nobody was expecting these people to go.
Right.
It's not like they were, you know, older people or just people that you knew were on a path that was going to crash. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, exactly. And I do like it when you use adjectives. So, you know, I've always liked that.
Do you like that part? Should I use more adjectives? Less adjectives?
Yeah, I do. I like it.
It could have just been top 13 deaths.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. And like, I like it when you say it, and I like it like when we talk, like just use more adjectives. And you know what? As we go further on Let Me Put a List Together, more adjectives out of you, Mr. Mitchell.
I will strive to do that. All right. Hey, don't forget to check us out. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe, or you can listen to us wherever you listen to podcasts, or download them, whatever they do nowadays, whatever the kids do now. And for Mark Grody and Brian Mitchell, this is Let Me Put a List Together. We will talk to you soon. Thank you for listening. Take care.
Later.